December 31st, 2008 is the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
from Pedro show. We started off with John Coltrane doing number one. Then we heard Feedbacker Part 2 by Boris. I got to see Boris. It was in a place called Unit. And it was so packed with people, I had to watch them on television. Inside the pad.
Nice.
Yeah, it was kind of bunk. I mean, Boris's band, you got to take front on.
Thank you.
This was written in 1968 when many major cities were rioting. And we were talking about it at dinner, so I thought I would go back in time a little bit, or a whole lot, depending on how old you are. In Paris, the black and red flags fly from the Sorbonne. In Paris, workers and students unite, and I look for a precedent of world revolution. Find out communists or bourgeois pigs. General de Gaulle tells the people that the shit in the beds would get them. He cut out and left them in a political vacuum until they burned their own cars and cried for a leader. His experience and Southern CRS superior to the slingshots of cerebral students. Charges began at 2 a.m., the delicate shops intact. By noon, the stones are in place in the street, the cars hauled off. If you want to miss the revolution, go to bed early and wake up at noon. Gas in the air, the Frenchman has his lunch. Outside the cupola, the sweet bums are kissing a la Genet. The active ones, anyway, not those grown formless, huddled against the wall, skin draped as if pinched from a rotten soft peach. And in the cupola, the very rich and the very young and the very beautiful boys and girls caught slumming all night, talking about how they wrecked their cars and how many speeding tickets they have, and properly surrounded by their entourage, they buy the stage and leave. A newspaper reads, "Bye Bye Bobby," and all about gun-crazed America. Late that night, the cafe is cleared with police and tear gas outside. Stranded with a journalist, I take a napkin, wrap it around my face, and camp. Can you imagine an American in this situation without a gun? And then, one evening, before the delicate French moon trailed above the balconies of filigree, dripping pools of silver and sky through the black shadowed trees, where Pam walked on bricks of childhood streets. The next day, we lit a candle for Kennedy in Notre Dame, in front of a statue with a serpent at its feet.
Watt from Pedro Show. That was Black Cat Bone by Mr. Airplane Man. And before that, we had Good Luck from Many Birthdays. Paris before that by Charles Plimel. Good luck to Charlie. He's got to go have some surgery. Mm. He's a beautiful man.
Yeah, good luck.
Before that, we had the Fester Feelies, somebody from Virginia, with Mulberry. Kings of Lower Town before that was Still in Love with His Old Town. And we started off with Duke Mo Fez, from Italy, and Peace of Mind. Maybe some of that discussion to start off the show wasn't the most together for me. It's very
it was entertaining.
You think it was entertaining?
To an extent.
Okay, kind of entertaining, but maybe not too enlightening. Well, I guess
it was not your best work.
Enlightening. enlightening. Actually, I was trying to talk about the trip, right? So that was a little different. And then, of course, the hunt for a revealing recollection from you of your past. It ain't gonna happen.
I don't know what to think about it anymore.
I used to think, I keep interrupting her, so let's just let her talk.
Yeah, no, I think I don't do well when I'm not interrupted. I get lost.
You get lost in your own story?
In my non-story.
I get lost in my stories many a times.
It's not fun having conversation one-sided.
Oh, yeah. Speeches. Monologues.
Yeah. Not when I'm not prepared.
I think I had given up on trying to speak of my trip. So, yeah, let's...
I know it was pretty...
Let's hear about Miss Peak's childhood. It was intense. It was the third time this year for me. And it was just great to bring Nels.
When was the first time you went to Japan?
In 2000.
Okay.
Jamascus in the Fog.
And you've been going every year, right?
No. There was a big gap. I didn't go again until the Stooges. And
that was?
2004.
Okay.
When that Telluric Current thing was recorded at Shibuya Axe. But I wasn't aware, really, of a music scene that I could relate and play with. It was more like, I've come with this band, big band, to play the big pad.
Sure.
Much different.
I have a pretty, I have an impression that it's pretty open to different things, right? It's always started with small group of people there. And there
many little scenes, I think.
Yeah, and they work hard to get things going for their scenes, right?
Yeah. you have to... It's like Manhattan times... You know how...
100.
It's hard to get things happening there.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, there's enough people and energies and ideas, but the way things are, they're really... cramped and tight. Seems people spend a lot of their time just they have to be living. It's not such a have a garage and
and fixing cars
after school and just something you do. You know how urban life is. And so I think, I don't know, those kind of pressures put on a certain thing that represents the Sosa in the art. You know, I think what most people probably think is that they're into imitate. And I don't, you know, sort of like Europe was too with the old... rock and roll. They hadn't really come up with their own yet, I guess. Although in England they did. In fact, they had to teach it back to U.S. people. I mean, it's just strange.
I think it's all interpretive. Interpretive?
Yeah. And so, try not to judge too hard on any kind of deal and just learn the most you can out of the situation. I was just really glad to bring Nels because he's... Not only him looking forward to it so much and always wanting to go play there, but people there wanting to see him and play with him. Mr. Shimmy, it was a great thing.
And I have no doubt he's quite influential, you know. I'm sure that there'll be more of it.
Yeah, and we're talking about next year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When? Like December?
Probably around the same time. I told him to start making a window now.
Yeah.
But it's the end of the first hour. Watt from Pedro Show, December 31st, 2008, last day of the year. Hold tight for hour two. December 31st, 2008, is the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. And here's something brand new from Nels' truly solo album.
Yeah.
Coward.
play the song.
Started off the third hour with something new from Mr. Nell's client.
Yeah.
And only Mr. Nell's client. This is a solo record.
Mm-hmm. I was there when he
Yeah, now what do you know about this that I don't?
It was recorded in Echo Park, Studio Catasonic. I was there for a couple of nights that he was recording, and he practically brought everything he owned into the studio. So he can have a free range at whatever comes up. But
do you discuss this record with you? Before?
Not in the technical.
No, his intent.
He tried to show me what some parts of it means, and I kind of struggled with the whole. I think it's westernized myth or Greek mythology and stuff around it, and I don't really know anything about it, so I might not retain information.
Well, the Onan shit goes back to Old Testament.
Yeah.
Christian.
But it sounds
Do you know about the myth of Onan?
No.
Or some people would not say myth.
No.
Onan spilled the sea.
Which, what?
You don't know.
No.
Onan spilled the sea.
Spilled the sea. Explain.
Yeah, well, because it's. You gotta have babies. You don't spill the sea.
Spill the seeds? Okay.
The man.
Yeah, he explained a little bit about that.
So, in these modern days. An Onanist, when you call somebody Onanist, it means masturbator.
Right.
Kind of. Kind of, slightly. Barely. And there's a suite called the Onan Suite. Mm. Do you discuss this with you? It's not really Greek mythology. It's before that.
Go ahead, you tell me.
I did.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Yeah, you mentioned. But no, I was pretty mesmerized by the whole concept and was listening. I just love going to a recording studio and hear the playbacks and, you know, all the ideas coming together and trying to get it right. So, yeah.
Now, you've been to other Nails Klein recordings before.
A couple.
How is this different?
Other than him being by himself. I don't know. Nelson is pretty calm. You know, he doesn't freak out. He doesn't.
In the other recordings, he was freaking out.
Well, I mean, if you have a lot more people, like in January, he had like a dozen people he was dealing with. Then he was a little bit more organized and
Russia.
Yeah, Russia, the Dirty Baby project, which is releasing in September. This coming
you wrote
year.
Many pieces for many people.
39 pieces. That was one of the most amazing sessions I've seen.
And this coward, did he speak to you of calling a coward?
Yeah, I mean, he told me in advance about this whole concept of coward. You know, how he. I think.
You want to share?
I'm a little bit buzzed right now. I don't remember. No, I think it's
you want
like
the beam?
The beam. No,
it's New Year's Eve.
Then it would be all over. I remember it might have been at the Rusha's recording that
he brainstormed
it. He was brainstorming the idea of something, and it's always somehow I think I overheard him say that, you know, I always wanted to make a solo album called Coward, because, you know, it's kind of come up in conversation there it is.
I don't want to do this, but I infer a coward.
Mm-hmm.
Not being able to do it by yourself.
Well, you know, it's cute that his in his liner notes say something about like, why coward? Let me count the ways. And I think from little I know about the concept, it might be. You know, I don't want to speak for him. You know, like it
you
is
don't
it's
have
just,
to.
Just my impression maybe. It's like. I'm probably wrong. I guess by him, you know, I don't know. Is it? It's gonna bite me back. But is he hiding? Coward is more like hiding, right? Yeah. And
coward hides.
And a lot of music and a lot of improvisation that he does. Maybe this is a part of like. Of padding his surrounding and his
not fighting coward but giving in.
Just stating the fact that what his world maybe is and he puts out a lot of music, you know, so much music every year.
Yeah, right.
And
this music is
it's sort of
a monument to cowardice.
Yeah, I might say so. Yeah.
You don't think this record might have been a struggle against?
No.
No. Giving in?
Neither. It's just the way it is, you know, just stating the fact.
One, yeah. Progress report?
Yeah, progress report, I think. But, you know, of course, you know, people tell me it's something else entirely.
Yeah, but look, I ain't asking you to speak for anyone but you.
Okay.
That's cool.
And a lot of time I make stuff up in my head.
Yeah,
so
it's cool.
So I apologize.
That's cool. But you were there at the recordings and you did have him speak to you.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah.
Maybe you carry a little more weight than some cat I just bumped in a new down by the mayor's office.
Where were you?
By the
doing
Hollywood
there?
Sign. Aren't we by the Hollywood sign?
Oh, right, for the fashion show.
Isn't the Hollywood sign around here?
Yeah, like you can't see from
here. Yeah.
But yeah, it's not far. 7 miles, I think.
7 miles?
To Hollywood.
That's closer than Pedro to Matsua.
What's Matsua?
Matsua is a Jap store I can buy a Jap.
Oh.
It's in Carson.
Oh,
No, that.
The Japanese stuff is evil.
I'm interested in Coward. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened was, when I made that album in April with him,
yeah,
Black Gang,
oh, Black Gang, yeah. Wish I was there.
Yeah, you were there some.
Awesome. Yeah. 3 times.
Right. But he spoke about Onan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In reference to a solo record.
Of course.
Because he asked me about the words, and I told him that I thought my words for that album, that album for me is about autumn.
Yeah.
And I thought I was playing the part of the evasive Onanist.
Interesting.
So, I think me and Mr. Nels share on some level.
Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways, I'm way too weird for him.
I'm sure.
But you know, it's never stopped him from being very generous with me.
Mm.
No.
Well, he's like that.
Yeah.
He's very generous to
Beautiful.
Me all the time.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And then, you know, I always tell him, like, oh, yeah, I went to, I went on What's the Radio Show again. And you, do you realize that we always talk about you, right? And, of course, it's always say, oh, God.
What, like,
it's like, oh, why do you talk about me?
Middle ground.
Yeah.
Okay. After Nels's Thurston County, from his new album. Mm-hmm. We played something you asked for from the Charlie Hunter Trio,
yeah.
San Francisco band,
no.
called Sound for Frankfurt.
They're from the East Coast.
Charlie Hunter?
Yeah, he lives out there now.
He moved?
A long time ago.
Fuck.
With family and everything.
Brooklyn?
I think he lives like upstate New York. I don't know. It's New York-ish over there.
I didn't know that. Well, he was in San Francisco a long time.
Well, he grew up over there.
Yeah.
But...
Wow, excuse me, Mr. Charlie. But I fucked up. Okay, you're right coast.
Well, I chose Welcome Sorry. To Frankfurt because
right.
I'm trying to...
Yeah, you should go more east to Frankfurt.
I'm trying
you
to...
Know, no, I'm talking...
No, I have to tell you that I'm just trying to pull some kind of Germany mojo.
Yeah, but I've got some experience with Frankfurt that you probably don't know of.
I don't, but I... Yeah, I don't know.
In the old days, when you played Frankfurt, Frankfurt was the headquarters. This is when there was Soviet Union.
Mm.
So this is before West Germany was just hospital for Middle East, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And there was a lot of soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankfurt was the town. So, you'd play there a lot of soldiers. Well, there's a big rule against fraternizing. Now, officers don't mix with enlisted men. But believe it or not, there was punk rock officers, and there was punk rock enlisted men. They wanted to go to the gig. So they mix. First thing when you meet a soldier, a U.S. soldier in Europe, is they'd say to you, 2 days, 4 weeks! Pretty much. They'd always tell you when they were getting out.
Yeah.
They couldn't wait.
Yeah.
They couldn't wait. And there was a club there by the train station called the Bochkov.
Mm.
Now, also in Frankfurt, on the German side of it, in the middle of town, there's a huge sculpture of Euro. What did I say? Rope? No, it's a Euro.
Oh.
Maybe it rotates. I can't remember. But it's a big Euro. Because Frankfurt is their stock exchange.
It's
their bank town.
Is it?
Yeah. So when you said that title to me, I thought, first time I played there was in 83 with Black Flag. I played there many times.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of the soldiers and I thought of the monies.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it's a big hub for Lufthansa. So, but actually, happened in town, great people. Some great artists there. Yeah, yeah.
I think there's...
I've met people on the West. Well, all through Germany there's good folks. Yeah. But that West thing there, they're all kind of hooked up with Cologne and Dusseldorf and...
It seems like they're pretty open to art and music there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, big time. They got some pigs. Mm-hmm. I was driving between Stuttgart and Frankfurt in a Mercedes, the plain clothes guys. Mm-hmm. When we're in a Dutch van, it like says Otto Bohur, and like Bohur is, you know, it's Dutch, but I mean, don't tell a Dutchman this, but it's kind of a little close to German. Bohur is kind of a slang for a prostitute.
Okay.
You got this painted on your boat. And of course you're Holland, so you must have all the drogas. The motherfuckers pulled us over and searched everything, and of course nothing. Went through Tom's what do you have? Some kind of capsule of wheatgrass or something.
Okay.
But they found nothing because we didn't have anything. Of course not.
Yeah.
They go to us. We can bring the dogs. I said okay. No. Well, your van, you know, Dutch. Where's the drogas? No. So what? You know? EU or whatever. No, they're, look, country to country.
Yeah.
Cops are kind of a kindred spirit.
Mm.
Some cool ones, but a lot of cats with. Anyway, all our stuff out at the rest area. We just drove off. No dust tube mirror light or, you know, sorry or anything.
Yeah.
Just an undercover Mercedes.
Yeah.
But man, had a great gig in Frankfurt.
Mm.
Stuttgart was a Norma Dome with Chili Peppers.
Oh, okay.
Work the room.
Yeah.
So Charlie.
So that was a couple years ago.
He probably works over there.
Mm-hmm.
For you folks who don't know, Charlie Hunter's incredible guitarist. Who plays an unorthodox guitar, the top strings, a couple of them are bass strings.
Yeah. Seven string guitars.
I played a gig with him once. He gave me these fucking... Yeah, I was in Florida, and he did James Brown songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's into that, you know.
I think they were wearing fezzes and things.
Yeah.
I think he had Brain on drums.
Who?
At the time. Brain.
Oh, Blake?
Brain.
Brain.
Prog Cat.
No.
Yeah. He's played with Les. He played in Guns N' Roses.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know the San Francisco scene too much. But maybe Charlie don't either.
Oh,
no.
Brooklyn.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Brooklyn,
yeah,
that's where I want to record my next Missing Man album.
Yeah, I remember you talking
now,
about
I've been doing a lot of gigs
you.
With...
Yeah, Autumn, right?
Second Man.
No, wait.
No, Autumn was... with Nels and Bob Lee.
I can't keep up with you.
My Shubun Nohi. First Day of Autumn.
Okay.
With Raoul and Tom, I miss a man. I want to make my third opera. I wrote my third opera about... Well, it's two things, really. And you might find these different. You might not even understand them. You don't know how wide your thing is, but... You know Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, I never watched it entirely.
You know Hieronymus Bosch?
Nope.
Dutch painter?
No.
Like the Garden of Earthly Delights, this kind of thing? Guy who lived about 500 years ago.
Okay.
Very strange paintings.
Mm.
A lot of creatures, so I found out that these creatures were actually visual, well, a guess at it. They might be visualizations of proverbs and aphorisms.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know 500 year Dutch. So I made up my own. Another part of it is about this Wizard of Oz thing, because I figured out that maybe Baum was writing about a coming-of-age story for a woman. Because those, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion, they're actually the farmhands. You see them at the beginning of the movie, they're the farmhands. So she's growing up and she's looking at dudes and how they have to go through these trips to prove their sake, think they're man. Mm-hmm. And of course, for women, there's two choices, right? You're either the good witch or you're the bad witch. But the men, they have, you know, if I only had a brain, you know. And, you know.
Okay.
Give me a badge, I'll be a hero. Give me a clock, I'll have a heart. It's kind of weird shit. But just her tripping on this. I wasn't not having any judgments. It was just her tripping on this. You know? Well, she just wants to click the ruby slippers and there's no place like Cartwright, Kansas. And this ain't Kansas. Actually, but see, that's what... Was it written by a woman? It was written by a man, so...
So it's man's interpretation of what a woman goes through.
Maybe. I don't know. This is another man's interpretation of another man. Maybe should have asked Andy Warhol. I was just interested in doing it, and it fucking seemed to jive with this Bosch thing, because it was a trip on that side. Because all the songs... are some kind of man. All them creatures, they're amalgamations of organic and mechanical parts. Mm-hmm. But they're man, a lot of the ones I used in my opera. It's a weird opera too. It's my third one. There's no beginning, no middle, and no end. It's a much different opera. And the little songs, which is why I picked Raoul and Tom. Miss a minute. Now what I want to do is a tour, and halfway through the tour, stop in. Maybe you want to come out there to Brooklyn, because Tony Mamoni, maybe or I have to. I got to get this straight with Ig, because right now it seems Stooges gig is going to start in July. But if I do half the tour with Tom and Raoul and then record, what better prac to get the fucking, ain't like Nels where you can fly these motherfuckers in and then you're recording it.
That's right.
Yeah. And I mean, not them, myself included. So we get some prac on it. But all these creatures are some kind of man. There's 30 tunes. That's the other thing about it. I kind of circle back on my youth. When I was first writing songs with D. Boone, and we made little songs.
Yeah.
So that's the thing about the third opera. It harkens back. And the whole idea of the old Minuteman was not little songs, just little parts of one big song. Mm. So in a way, I might have been into doing operas then and didn't even know it. I don't know. I think you know so much in your 20s. And I think in your 50s, you know so little. It's okay. I think it's okay. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
And we're talking off air about what kind of might matter when you're gone.
Yeah.
And I was thinking... works.
Yeah.
And I got out of balance the last 10 years and did too many gigs.
You think?
So now I'm making works.
So you think that that's a difference?
Gigs are good.
Between living it, you know, doing...
Gigs you do for people.
And being there.
You're in the moment with people.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
So you now think recording is more important?
No, inhale, exhale, some yin-yang balance trip. Can't be all gigs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess in my case, I've been kicking. I've just been shooting the hell out of everything.
Yeah.
So,
it's time for words.
When we were talking off air, I just told you that I developed like 100 rolls of film, so which means thousands of pictures.
That's beaucoup.
Of this whole year alone. That I was so, it was just such a weird feeling to look back on this year, just in the past couple weeks, through these pictures I've taken, and it's mostly, there's some from the Warped Tour I went with you, and
pelicans,
a lot of bandits.
Sea lions.
No, that's yours. That's definitely your territory.
Raccoons.
Especially raccoons. But some of those guys are raccoon like. But yeah.
Hey, wash your chow.
Sorry.
No. I know what you're saying.
But yeah, I'm in the middle of putting this thing together so I can put my whole year together so everybody can see it already, that what I've done and what I saw.
Yeah, but as mortality said on you, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That sense.
All the time.
What's to be left?
Well, that's the whole idea.
What's to be done to make sure something is left?
Well, the thing is, I shot this in such a particular way that I have my own idea of how to proceed with it. And
well, of course.
And I felt like there are times when I could have just died and nobody would know what these are and what is up with all this. So that's kind of a weird sense of urgency that it hit me sort of this past few months that I need to get it.
Yeah, but what about mystery?
Mystery?
Is there a cachet?
I'm sorry.
A hidden value?
Hidden value of something that is unknown.
Yeah, these works.
Yeah.
What could they mean? Then the observers feed in all their ideas.
And I'm sorry, I'm too control freak.
Yeah,
too
good.
Ideas. Yeah. It's
Thomas Jefferson wrote his own thing in the stone, the headstone. What's it called? Epitaph. Epitaph.
And what did he say?
Oh, the author of the Religious Freedom, Act of Religious Freedom, and Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
He put on an obelisk. It wasn't on a cross. Something from old Egypt. Yeah, and something like accomplishments. You never been in Monticello?
No.
It's in Virginia. That's where he lived, and they got a school there called University of Virginia.
You lived there when you were like 6 years old?
No, I lived in the boat part.
When was that?
That's Charlottesville.
I didn't think you left Pedro since you moved there.
I lived in Norfolk. I was born in Portsmouth. It was very far from where that school is. Well, not that far. Closer than Pedro. Still in Virginia, but like in the middle where there's no sea. I live by the sea. I live by the biggest Navy base in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, my thoughts of it as a boy was all gray. All the boats were so gray. Everything was so gray.
Dude, it doesn't get old.
Did it get old? Yeah, might have. I don't know.
You refused.
I was a boy. And
yeah. I was just saying, like, now that you're older.
When I see gray boats,
yeah.
I think of my pop. I think my pop weighed down in them.
Because he works
in the engine room.
Yeah, he works there, right?
It's very deep in there. Yeah, I don't have a romantic notion about Navy. But,
you sure are knowledgeable about it.
What, my pop?
Sorry.
What do you think he talked about?
I don't know.
You know,
philosophy.
He was 17 when he joined the Navy. The Navy was his whole world. No, he didn't know much about it.
That's
he knew
all
about
you.
The Navy. But the Navy took him around the world. I got to learn about the world through him. But I learned a lot in the Navy.
Oh, well, he's gone like for a period of time, maybe so often.
He toured. Went to war.
Yeah. On a ship. Right?
In an engine room.
Wow.
He pushed the... He helped push a boat around. He never saw where it was going.
Okay, they don't
until
tell
it
him?
Pulled up. Huh?
They don't tell him?
He's too deep down. He's below the water.
It's big. Is that big?
Yeah, they're big. The Enterprise, I think, had 5,600 men.
Oh. That's big.
I think that's what weirded him out about chow. He'd have to chow with all these cats. So when he chowed with me, it was like... My mama, the very relaxed Italian way, take a long, not my pop.
Yeah. Well.
I think the Navy, a big part, is chow.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah, you've never read The Sand Pebbles.
No.
You've never seen the movie.
You told me about it.
Yeah. Keep banging on this. It's hard to explain this shit. Because, I'm a bass player. I think I share some things a little bit in a parallel universe sort of a way. But I did grow up with the Navy. This is a man who told me never to join the Navy. I think the Navy bummed him out. But it was also his way of seeing the world. So there was a duality.
Yeah.
And of course, all I heard from him was that. So. And his men loved him. He's a chief, not an officer, but he had a gang of men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a trip. And like an army, you call a sergeant. So, he retired to Fresno where there's no ocean.
Yeah, I lived there.
Yeah. Well, it tells you about the Navy. That's why that book, you know, that book, The Sand Pebbles, was written by a Navy man.
Mm-hmm.
Many years in the engine room.
Wow.
Engine room's a trip. You're way down. Very, very sweaty.
It's scary.
But they need you. So you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You did it. I started sending him postcards on tour because he didn't have music people in his family. He didn't understand. He thought music was the way I was with D. Boone. So it was very hard for him to understand when D. Boone got killed why I was still doing this.
Right.
So I started sending him postcards from tour. And one day he says to me, I go to Fresno visit him.
Like
he says, you're like a sailor.
Yeah. You're selling your...
And I never thought that. I never thought that. But that's where I got the idea for the engine room. And I got... Now, me and D. Boone's favorite movie as boys was The Sand Pebbles.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't tell what was going on. It was complicated. I think we just like Steve McQueen in a sailor suit or something. I don't know why. We liked it a lot. But I found the book. I was on tour with Porno for the Pyros and I read it. And it tripped me out. It was like, from my pop growing up and hearing him, I could tell this cat was an enlisted man.
Mm-hmm.
In the Navy. This wasn't just some writer who visited a boat for a week.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell. That really struck a chord in me. And it turned out this guy, Richard McKenna, was the only book he ever wrote.
Wow.
Yeah, he was this guy, I think 23 years in the Navy or something. Oh, you want to be a writer? You read a lot of Hemingway. You read a lot of Faulkner.
Sure.
You read some stuff. Yeah, and just self-educated himself and wrote this fucking trip.
Hmm.
Which is China in the 20s and some
riverboat that the Navy got from Spain in the war, and how it's fucked up because they had a lot of corruption and coolies running all the hard work, and then the revolution comes, they're gone. What do these sailors do? They are, of course, one sailor in particular, Jay Coleman, the engine room man. He wants to belong to something, but he just cannot tolerate bullshit. Yeah. It's very difficult for him.
Like some of us.
Yeah, because the Navy, this is an indictment. This also rang true with me reading that with my father and this man, Richard McKenna. If you spend enough time in it, but anyway, I also thought of a non-military man, Jim Joyce. And the way he put the whole life in one day. So put the whole life of the Minuteman in one day.
Yeah.
But using this is my pop story of the Navy and this man, Richard McKenna's book. And that's how I made my first opera. Second opera about a heavy sickness. Almost killed me. I really wanted to do it about my cat. But then he died. And that first opera was so sad already, so I didn't do it. I did it about the sickness, and I lived, and it had a happy ending. So now comes third opera, and this is with Tom and Ravel. But since October, I've been playing a lot with Second Man.
Right.
And I like two. No. After third opera, I'll record with them next year. In that record, not an opera, but kind of like this Black Gang record, where that's not an opera, but it's about fall. It's a concept. It ain't an opera. There's a difference. With Second Man, I want to make a record about work. Why? D. Boone would love it. Squire. And it's Squire Vase.
Yes, it is.
Korea. Yeah. Once a Squire Vase saved my life. I rented a mobile thing to record fire hose here in the valley in at Palomino. It's called Live Totem Pole. And the nut on my bass, the nut's where the string, you know where the bridge is, on the other end of the neck, that's called the nut, and it broke. I've got no bass. Bob Weston from Volcano Sons let me use his beat Squire. I had rented this mobile recording, you know, saved the day.
You always get saved.
Let's play more music.
From Pedro Show. That was Cloud of Synthetic Locusts by Kunab Ku. Before that, we had The Fish Job 2. That's T-O-O-O. By Agnes Steck. And before that, we had Candle Seed by Gina Diario. And we started off the set with Study by Now. So a lot of sisters there, Miss Pete.
Good.
You like that?
Yeah.
Okay. It's the end of the second hour of the December 31st, 2008 New Year's special Watt from Pedro Show. Very, very happy New Year.
Yay.
It just went off a while ago, and we heard firecrackers, not gunshots. Not like Pedro. All right, LaSalle Park. Hang tight for hour three. December 31st, 2008. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Actually, it's the 1st of January, 2009, because we just had New Year's in.
That's right.
Right, right. Now we're going to play something from San Francisco, a band called Carolina. And since I was here to do a Christmas show, this one's called Jingle Bells.
I'm not afraid. Thank you. pious man. Each hair on the knuckle, salmon for nefarious hues, dazzling the eyes with jewelry, this is a negative clue. Some woman explained simply, sun bakey changing hairs. You can bake in the curl shape, nay, Felicia's the devil there.
Turn the volume down there. Watt from Pedro Show. We just heard Carolina with Jingle Bones. I had mistakenly called it Jingle Bells. Mm-hmm. It's not Jingle Bells. It's Jingle Bones. It's a good jam out of them. I remember the Minutemen playing with them. And, now, the cat I know from the old days that just got a hold of me again was named Grux. But there was another singer, too. They had two singers. And one of these cats rolled over and fired a dildo out of his ass.
What?
He said it clear across the stage, and I was thinking. I wasn't just thinking. I asked Dee Boone. I said, man, how do we follow that up?
You don't.
He was dressed like a Beastie Boy, too. You know, he wasn't... You would never suspect it. Mm. It was a trip. Now, Carolina is the name in the middle, or the beginning or the end, whatever. It's the consistent thing, because the band, the name of the band is always changing. Hey, baby. Whoa, look at that.
Nails.
It's a leech. Maybe it's nails. It is nails. Hey, nails.
You're putting on speakers.
How are you? Did you do your gig?
Yeah, I played like 15 minutes because, of course, we were playing our duo thing right before midnight. So, whatever, 15 minutes and then Happy New Year, la la la. I wish I'd known that you were going to do your radio show at Pete's house like a month ago. I never would have done this. I'd rather have been there.
You mean you wouldn't want to wait around all night for 15 minutes?
Yeah, it's cool. It's all right. You know, Kevin was there. Kevin Fitzgerald was doing some DJing later, and Mitchell, Professor Cantaloupe, and Miss Cincinnati played. You know, my friends Jeremy and Jessica played on your group. And LA improviser set with Stewart and Andrew Paskin, Wayne Pede, and all these, Ezra Buchla, all these guys were, it was, you know, potentially wild. I really like New Year's Eve, so it's all kind of, for me, it's always a bit weird and mildly depressing. Because, you know, after all, we made up time, whatever, man, you know.
But, you know. Now, you know, we played Thurston County.
Yeah, I got your message, and I talked to Carla, and she and I were talking about wanting to be on your show, like, just a few days ago, while we were in town, so when do you do your next show?
Next week.
What day?
What's a good day for her?
I don't know, when she's around, I'm around, you know, other than these banyan gigs, I don't have that much going on, so.
Let's do it.
We could do it from here again.
We could do it from Peaks Band.
We've got Peak now, program now.
You know, we played Thurston County, but Peak got kind of in-depth on her theories about Coward.
Oh, no. No.
Excellent.
So we're wondering what you think.
It's a hypothesis.
Well, I've taken a vow of silence, so...
I did.
What?
She did.
That's okay.
No, she was thinking about silence, too.
Okay. But, you know, the name of it is so deep that I can't really talk about it comfortably in public. But it's something I've been thinking about for almost 30 years now, so the relevance is not diminished in 30 years, so... There's a little bit of humor there, and there's also a lot of truth, a lot of nakedness there.
A lot of nakedness.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm into that.
Of course.
Hanging Man, it's like New Year's and.
Yeah, she's got a sparse pad here, man. Sparse. Is it sparse? Is it sparse? And she says it's only from the 60s.
Oh, yeah, it probably is.
This area is from the 60s? Shit, the way the floor is rattling shit. I don't know. But... No, because the first money went to Pasadena, and I thought this was in between for, like, lawyers and doctors.
Well, I would think it'd be 50s, but, you know, I don't know. What do I know? You know, I was in Carla's house, man. That house is from the early 30s.
30s, right?
Yeah, and the place I live in now is really old. I'm not sure when, but I think it's 30s originally. It's like obviously a little Home Depot since then, but...
Yeah, of course.
Oh, the garage is in this place, and it's fucking old.
But you're Glassell Park?
I'm in Glendale now.
Oh, you're in Glendale. Okay.
I wish I wasn't in Glendale. That's why she picked me up years ago when I met
Pete. Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. The home of the fucking intense cops.
Yep. Glendale cops, they suck. And actually, Carly got pulled over in Pasadena going to get Indian food today, and the cops detained her for 40 minutes and pulled all this bullshit on her and let her go, and she got to take the cold Indian food back to her house where she was having Indian food with our old roommate Bob and this guy that lives at the house, Josh, or I don't know. And she's had a rough day.
It's terrible.
And, yeah, well, you know what? It's like, I guess you probably shouldn't actually get Indian food in Pasadena the day before the Rose Parade. You know? So that's what happened. It was like mayhem. People camped out for the fucking Rose Parade, bonfires, cops everywhere, you know. Fucked up.
So what'd you play for your 15 minutes tonight?
A bunch of skronk with saxophone and guitar, a bunch of like quiet stuff and loud stuff and freaky stuff, and then we played Auld Lang Syne, Good Night Irene.
Good Night Irene, yeah, it's great. Lead Belly.
And John Wall was there.
You know, John Wall.
Yeah. John Wall and Kevin. DJing, and you know, John might work at Amoeba's, I mean, because you know, Becca, my friend Becca, she got a job at Amoeba, so a lot of Amoeba people were there, and some friends of mine, you know, my little musician friends and some other folks that live there. There's like five people that live in that place, and it was cool. It was all right. It might have been, you know, a young person that believed in the new year as being a whole big deal, then I might have been having a better time. And I also wish that I would rather have just been like hanging out with you guys or watching a movie with Carla or something. It would have been more my speed.
I hear you going to the inauguration.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening exactly. But, Wilco's doing something in Washington, D.C. then. And my friend David Breskin might have a ticket for me. So I am going. That's going to be fucking insane. Talk about security.
Might be cold too.
Yeah, it'll brisky. But I'll be in Chicago all of February, late January to February, so I'll be experiencing a little briskness.
Now, did you get them MP3s from Mr. Shimmy?
Yeah, man, I think they sound great. I think basically everything sounds really good. I have virtually nothing to say about anything.
Yeah, now those are rough things, but...
Well, they're rough, but they sound great. I don't have anything good to listen to computer and shit on, but I put on my little stupid iPal, and everything sounds pretty fucking good to me. And I wrote it as much. I told him as much. Nice stuff.
Right, but you want a new title for Diamond Queen.
We gotta wait for some poetry on that.
Yeah. Well, I was told it was coming.
Yeah, well, I think this stuff is really cool, Watt. I really do. It was a great experience.
Yeah, what are your impressions of Japan?
Well, you know, I wasn't there very much. I was only in the biggest city, but man, I was more than ready.
But you were in a little part of it, Shima Takedo.
Well, I was checking out so much of what they've been doing there for so long. And in a way, I felt completely prepared. It felt totally normal for me to be there. That was what was really interesting. And then the rest of it was just like, well, man, my mind is fucking blown. I'm in Japan. Good music. Shimmy and Yuko totally rule. All those kids and that were in those bands and those fans and everybody, it was just sweet.
Ciao.
Great. Oh, man. Oh. That was, like I said, you know, I've been reading that book about Italian cuisine and all this New York bullshit and all this revolting meat stuff and all this kind of, you know, the layers and you know, what do you want to say, kind of fanciful, you know, and then just to go and have that direct, really, like, direct kind of much more cut-to-the-chase kind of cuisine where everything's a little more unfettered and God, everything I ate was great. Everything.
Now, the day after you left, I got to go to Sento, which is a public bath. So you kind of missed out on that experience.
Alan McGinnis and Jim Black are telling me to go to do that. How is that?
That was great. Well, one thing tripped me out was the sauna. It was very hot, but there was like a 8-foot television in there.
No.
Yeah. Not happening.
Oh.
You don't want that shit blasting commercials. And people are rapping and shit. So that was the only weak thing, was the TV and the sauna. And a big ass one that was loud.
Big hot TV.
Right in the bulkhead. I sat up front to be by the heater and that motherfucker was blasting on me.
Oh, weird.
So what about the Fender that the Jazzmaster Fender supplied you with? Just got it back to Mr. Kenji. He's into it.
I guess I handed it back to them both, and I mean, I don't know if they're going to check it or what's going to happen to that guitar, but it needs to be fixed.
It's a little bit lower.
It's a little fucked up.
It was okay. And,
They tried. It was nice. It was lucky Mr. Shimmy had that Firebird.
Oh, yeah. You were great on that Firebird. You know what? I got a copy of the gig, so I got to flow that to you.
Oh, God.
All the songs, you did great on Maggot Brain. You did great on all of it.
Maggot Brain, man, I'll tell you what. By the time we got the Maggot Brain, the strings on that guitar were, like, flat on the neck. It was, like, just over. That's why I just started bashing it into the amplifier. Just like, oh, shit, man. Guitar is history.
No, you did great, man. And I'll make you a CD of this thing. Kazuto-san sent it to me, and it's the whole gig. It ain't the best mix and shit. It was just right off the thing. But, man, for coming off the plane and then just jamming on it, big respect. Yeah, I know you were psyched. It was righteous.
Just, working out stuff that day with Mr. Shimmy, changing strings together.
Yeah, he loves you, man.
I understood that whole bit he has with his little chunks of wood. That's some of the wackiest shit I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, he says it's all about symmetry.
He's a wild man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a really quiet man, but he's a wild man inside.
Yeah, I think he learns more our language. We'll know how wild he is.
Wow.
He played on New Year's with a buddy of his. But I got the other mixes for you, and I'll flow them when I get back home.
Okay.
Thanks so much for coming on and talking with us here. And I'll continue on and talk with Peek about Japan. Love you, Nels. That was Nels.
Oh.
Yeah, was that bad? Or what?
You have an election, doesn't mean...
Oh, I don't... Come on. I can imagine.
Yeah, it's what? I mean, democracy is insane system, actually.
But they had a prince there, Sihanouk, and...
Oh, yeah.
Nixon bombed them. Such a heavy...
Nixon...
Yeah, can you imagine? Thailand in the middle of all this for so long.
Yeah. They just switch sides, whoever's winning with them. They're like, oh, we want that. Allies.
Kind of. Never communist.
Because that's what happened when Japanese came in, you know.
That
the
was
World
heavy.
War II, they're like, oh,
yeah,
we went to Japan.
Yeah.
But then the U.S. was winning, so...
Yeah, after the war, was there heavy things about that after?
No.
No?
Well, it's a little bit, because, like, when the Japan switched to U.S.
Yeah.
alliance, there was, like, a sparse resources are a little bit sparse, and that's my parents' generation. This is not that long ago.
No.
You know? So I actually lived through a little bit of effect of that, only because my parents didn't have anything, you know, for a certain period of time when they were younger. So we grew up having to save everything and just treasure everything.
Yeah, of course.
Like every meal and just crazy, like saving.
Econo.
Yeah, it's totally funny, but you know, and anyway, so I don't know.
Now, you know, they relaxed their visas a few years ago.
They always have.
Okay, and they thought all these U.S. people were going to come.
Yeah, you can just show up and say that.
Yeah, but it was funny when they looked at the numbers. Yeah. Okay. That's a little. Okay, you hear that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, you know. But number one was China.
Yeah. All right.
Number two was South Korea.
Yeah.
And number three was Thailand. U.S. is way behind. Way back four. Yeah, because before that they had the visa and they thought, whoa, the U.S. monies will come in if we just, no visas, you just come in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was other Asia peoples.
Mm-hmm. Because
and there was a story.
Then India, too. I mean, you can't really discount it.
No, I'm talking about when Japan relaxed the visas.
I know.
This was a story that they have a paper that's written in obviously for Gaijin. And they were talking about this, and it really blew their minds.
Yeah.
Because they thought Asia would be the last people.
But what I'm saying is that like the economy of the world shifted so much. So China is actually one of the main tourists that come into the U.S. now.
No, but no.
And there.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
What they were saying was those... Tourists that go over there look at that land as kind of a model.
Yeah,
these guys made it. You know, U.S. number one economy,
mm-hmm.
Japan two, Germany three. Why are the two and three the former? Well, I have some opinions about this. I think these were, U.S. was worried about them going communist.
Mm.
Whether it was true or not, whatever. Also, these people, maybe they share weird things. I don't know.
What are you talking about?
I think all people share. You know what? I have no ideas about this kind of thing. But I did like the idea.
You should make
like the idea of Japan getting rid of that visa and not finding out U.S. was number one.
Yeah.
That other Asia cats came over.
You should make a point.
After all that hell, especially China, especially Korea, all that hell they pounded on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they still wanted to come.
Mm-hmm.
And tore factories and shit. Can you imagine? This is how they do it. Yeah. This is how they do it.
And you should make a point to go to Thailand next year.
Oh, I want to play there.
I will try to find you a gig,
Thailand.
It's ready.
Yeah, and I think when U.S. people think of Thailand, we're going to relax. We're going to relax.
Well, yeah, actually. It's hard for me to be motivated. In fact, that's what I'm trying to get rid of, is the Thai in me. It's like I'm always too relaxed. Like,
You talk to they talk about China people.
Yeah. What's
China
that?
People. Heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, intense, I guess time is money.
That's intense.
So my mom's side is Chinese.
Yeah, so China people are...
So I grew up watching.
You know, everybody's all fucked up with their, I think, ideas of people. No, the best way is for the other peoples to meet the other peoples.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, instead of having ideas of them.
Oh yeah, totally.
You just meet them.
I mean, that's
isn't this a big problem?
That's human problem in general. Yeah. The reacting on the idea of things instead of just going ahead and meeting it.
And then their selves. Mm-hmm. Why is it always about them presenting themselves? Mm-hmm. Like you come down off a cloud.
Yeah. But that's also kind of Western thing, looking into non-Western.
Yeah. What's that about?
Well, because of colonialism and this whole dominating planet for so many centuries.
Yeah, what's that about?
It's just humans, I guess.
What's that about? It really screws with me. Mm-hmm.
But then, Genghis Khan did a thing.
Yeah, what about that?
Ottoman Empire.
Yeah, what about that?
So it's just a matter of people taking turns.
Taking turns.
Yeah.
And they have very short-term memory. Mm-hmm. And you have no memory.
That's because people have to be concerned about
the immediate
needs.
The moment.
Yeah.
Like your mom and pop.
What about them?
That heavy shit after the war.
Oh, this mom. Yeah, I don't know anything about my dad.
Yep, that heavy shit.
Yeah.
Save everything.
Yeah. And I also have unrelatedly lost their house in a fire. So. And my 10 kids. So.
Yeah.
On that one side, Just. But yeah. They're good people.
Of course.
I'm the bad one. You realize that, right?
10 people.
No, 10 of my mom's.
Yeah.
18 of the cousins.
That's intense.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's okay.
No, it is what it is.
Yeah. too many, I know.
Do you think about their lives?
I do.
Yeah.
That's because I think about what they think of me, then in turn I think about what they are and what I am. And what's weird is that.
Do they want to visit you?
No.
No way?
They want me to go visit them because, they can only get small doses of my craziness. They can't.
They have no California idea.
They can't come. Well, I have one that just had twins.
Yeah.
A few days.
One.
A cousin. No, it's just a couple miles away.
Yeah.
But
just what?
I grew up with him, so he's like my brother.
But some from back there who want to come visit.
Well, I have a set of family in Chicago, some in Sacramento. I don't see those. But no, because I never been a stable person for them to rely on. Because when they come to visit, they want to hang.
Okay, maybe. Maybe they have SoCal
idea.
They
have no trust in me being able to host them whatsoever.
Oh, you have to host them.
I'm like the child forever, So they don't trust that I can have anything to offer. Besides, they don't want to meet my crazy non-Thai friends.
Yeah.
Because, it's a weird thing.
But if you had a Thai house set up, it would be nicer.
Well, if I was more in touch and telling them exactly how I live and all that stuff.
No, but if you did set up a Thai house, Thai situation.
Yeah.
Come to Southern California.
But that I had dinner here.
Yeah.
My uncle moved here and his wife.
Wow.
And I made dinner. And the first thing they did?
Right.
They took a picture of the dinner and sent it to Thailand right then and there and said, "Oh my God, she
Here's
made
her
food.
Yeah.
I made food at
and
all.
Not a cook."
But then they ate it and they're like, "This is not spicy." And then I went down.
It was calm.
It was just big chicken, and there's no Thai spices though. So I'm not even gonna try to cook Thai food. Come on.
Did you take them to Thai Town?
That's too expensive because they're Econo, right? So everything.
They live here now.
They do.
Wow. They like.
Oh, they used to live here 30 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. So they just came back.
Oh, wow.
So that's how my cousin was born in New York, and I was born here. Because some of them used to live here. They're some of the first generation Thais, actually, that came over here for work. Back then, they were actually needing more work.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
How was their adventure?
Hmm? How was theirs? It was hard, I heard.
No, but now how is their adventure?
Now they're in the 70s and they're just hanging out by the Thai temple. You know, it's just, yeah, a lot of people wonder why somebody would move into a foreign country just to be, like, within the Thai community or whatever, you know?
Well, for the work.
Yeah, but this is for, they're just hanging out. I don't know.
Calmer weather.
they just want to be closer to their son, I think.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It is another whole, you know, Thai weirdness. But it's becoming a thing in the past, anyways. I think my family is kind of old-fashioned, so we're a little bit behind what's going on now. A little bit, yeah. But my cousin, for the first time now, is learning to, like, be resentful of his parents, because now since they moved here, they want him to do what they want him to do. And he's been here for 20-something years, totally functional adult.
Right.
And now being told to wash dishes, don't leave the dishes there, and, you know, leave the house this time, come back this time, he just had it. And and then he was also, he blew his tops when he named his sons Jade and Aiden, the twins. And his mother just went nuts saying, like, those are not Thai names.
Oh, no.
And he was just like, this is it. Off. Step back. And it's just little things like that. It's just
no,
like,
but they're big things, maybe.
It makes me laugh because I have detached myself from this kind of criticism for 20-something years.
Yeah.
And my cousin is just going through it at, you know, 30-something here. And he actually now aligns with me because now he's, like, seeking comfort in the detachment.
The situations were different, so of course.
So, but, you know, I now came into a full circle where I now am able to recognize where his parents are coming from. Because, you know, the elder adults and the cross-cultural situation and the fact that they don't want to feel irrelevant in their son's life, which have been so close for so long, you know, it's all. So I kind of, like, being a diplomat for him in that sense, so. But it just still made me laugh.
Well, probably in the old land, they'd be moving in with
you. Oh, totally, totally. That's what I kind of expect in my case, even though I have no, like, I don't talk to my mother, but somehow I feel like there will have to be help, because there's no way you can have a child without grandparents.
Right, right.
There's no way. Or at least friends, or somebody there, a nanny. Not nanny, but somebody closer than nanny. Nanny seems so detached to me. Somebody who actually would take the child and treat like their own, the community of people. But that's how I grew up. That's how my cousin grew up. It's just a ton of people always looking after us.
And now to be separate from them.
Yeah.
The U.S. style.
Yeah. So, and two. He has two kids.
Yeah.
And I watched him. It's crazy. But then again, you know, life. It's not all you always plan for. You never can have everything go perfectly as you expected at the exactly time you want.
No, and you didn't pick how you're born either.
Right. That's kind of my ammo always.
Right.
Like, I didn't pick
this. You know? And the big question is, what is to be done?
Well, Yeah.
And of course, people have cultural. Yeah, it's weird.
It was weird. It's like I picked up a lot of Western.
When my pop found out about punk rock, man, it was
very heavy. Well, I still can't explain to people in Thailand what punk rock is.
Yeah. My
yeah,
pop.
I can't.
But at the end of the day, you know, he could relate to it. When I sent him the postcards, he said, "You were like Sailor, you're working the towns."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard for him to see eye to eye on the particulars, but I think in the big picture, and it's all about kind of letting go and trusting.
Mm-hmm.
And these young people got to be their own people.
But that's, I think,
they got to be their own people.
There's a slow shift, I think.
I know it is.
With the older people.
But even an older person would say to himself, I made a lot of mistakes. I want them to have it a little better than me.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And that's why I want to tell them.
I don't want them worse. Yeah, you want to protect them in a way, but in a way you want them to be their own person, because you could only get so far. And maybe they get beyond her. Maybe, or
but then
whatever beyond it means.
And in general, you know, older people have trials and errors, and they feel like there's a lot of things they have gone through.
Oh, yeah.
It's valuable.
No, it's true.
And so they see it in the younger generation, not recognizing it, and also certain values that have shifted, but the older people are not letting go. Mm. And that's, I feel that way. I feel that way in my old age. I'm looking at young people and I'm like, you don't even know what good is.
The young people.
Young people, like in the Warped Tour.
Remember that? Well, look, we're at the end of the gig.
Well,
we're at the show.
Well, can I tell you?
Thank you so much, Ms. Peek, for being aboard, sharing with us.
Quickly, my new website thing with all the photos from the year. It's blog.peakness.com. So,
but there's also peakness.com.
Yeah, that's portfolios.
But there's probably a link there to.
I should. That's later. But yeah. Yeah.
Give me now.
But okay, peakness.com. I'll put a link in there.
Now peakness.com.
Yeah.
Please.
Lots of what picture puking me amount.
And it's been 1 hour in the new year. It's 2009.
Yeah.
Okay, but we start on December 31st, 2008. Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.